I was glad to see when I came this morning some faces that haven't been able to be with us last Sunday. Glad that you're here, each one, and hope that our study this morning will be helpful to you. I'll say it again, I've said it before every time I have the opportunity. I think preaching must be in my blood because I enjoy it. I look forward to the opportunities that Kevin gives me, and I hope that we'll all together learn something very special today. Before we read our text, I'd like to set the scene because it's very important to understand exactly where this text fits in the life of Christ. When we first start reading, you will notice that it will say 2 days before the Passover. 2 days before the Passover. If you come down to verse 12 in the very same chapter, you will find that it is the day of the Passover. They're preparing for the meal in the upper room. Ryan just read concerning the Lord's Supper, that would be on that day, 2 days from where we're going to be at in our study. They will eventually go into the Garden of Gethsemane. Jesus will pray that the cup will pass from him. Later on, they will come and arrest Jesus. And before 48 hours are gone, Jesus will be dead. He will be in the grave. And so what we read in this particular text is very, very significant because of the time. Now, if you have your Bible, I would like for you to turn to Mark the 14th chapter. And we're interested in the first 9 verses. Let me tell you a little bit more about what we will see in this reading. We're going to see one single act of kindness. And we're going to see 2 occasions of deep resentment toward Jesus. If there is no other lesson to be learned in this particular text, it's this that comes in verse 8. Jesus' own words are the title of our study this morning. She has done what she could. She has done what she could. So many times we think that serving the Lord means that we've got to do something big, something great, something that everyone will take notice of. Here is a woman that is going to teach us a tremendous lesson. Jesus will identify what she does, but she has done what she could. Now read with me from Mark the 14th chapter, the first 9 verses. Now the Passover and unleavened bread were 2 days away. Chief priests and the scribes were seeking how to seize him by stealth and kill him. For they were saying, not during the festival, otherwise there might be a riot of the people. While he was in Bethany, the home of Simon the leper, reclining at the table, there came a woman with an alabaster vial, a very costly perfume, a pure nard. And she broke the vial and poured it over his head. Some were indignant, remarking to one another, why has this perfume been wasted? For this perfume might have been sold for over 300 denarii and the money given to the poor. And they were scolding her. But Jesus said, let her alone. Why do you bother her? She has done a good deed to me. For you always have the poor with you, and wherever you wish, you can do good to them. But you do not always have me. She has done what she could. She has anointed my body beforehand for burial. Truly I say to you, wherever the gospel is preached in the whole world, what this woman has done will also be spoken of in memory of her. What that woman did is going to be very important to our study. But before we get to the woman and Jesus, I'd like for us to think a little bit about these two complaints. First of all, the one of the high priest and other priests. They want to kill Jesus. Now, I can't imagine wanting to do that to just on the spur of the moment. What is there about Jesus that has caused them to have this terrible idea? I want you to turn back with me to Mark, the 11th chapter. And it might help us just a little bit before. Mark, the 11th chapter, verse 15 through 18. Now, we're trying to understand why, 2 days before the Passover, these individuals want to kill Jesus. They're looking for an opportunity. Read this, beginning in verse 15. Jesus came into Jerusalem. He entered the temple and began to drive out those who were buying and selling in the temple and overturning the tables of the money changers and the seats of those who were selling doves. And he was not permitting anyone to carry merchandise through the temple. And he began to teach and say to them, "Is it not written, 'My house shall be called a house of prayer for all the nations,' but you have made it a robber's den?" The chief priests and the scribes heard this, and they began to seeking how to destroy him, for they were afraid of him, for the whole crowd was astonished at his teaching. Let me suggest to you that when Jesus turned over the tables, he turned over a lot more in that temple than just those tables. He turned over a way of life. He turned over what some individuals had staked their reputation on, their power, their force, and it was nothing. Jesus signed his own death warrant that day. Now we come over to our text of Mark 14 and those first two verses. And I think we understand a little better why they had this idea that they wanted to kill him. People who were supposed to be the most religious people in Jerusalem wanted to kill the Son of God. I'm not sure that we can comprehend that. But then there's this. When you come down to verses 3 and 4, or 3 through 5, you have indignation, the statement, "This is a waste." And they also scold the woman. Now, some of these individuals in this dinner at Simon's house are probably apostles. And maybe there is a mixture in the home of Simon, some of his friends, others of a different acquaintance, some apostles. And you know how things kind of move from one to the other? Someone gets a bright idea and then those around them gather along with it. And so you have a group of people saying that what she has done is a waste. Mark this down. They could tell you exactly to the penny what the perfume was worth, but they couldn't comprehend the value of a kindness. That was beyond them. They couldn't see it. They couldn't understand it. You know, it's a terrible thing when you think about it, that these men who had been with Jesus, some of them for 3 years, couldn't understand a kindness done to their master. They have a problem. I wonder in our world today if it's not somewhat the same way. We're on a wrong wavelength when we look at Christianity and religion. Don't comprehend what we get out of it, the kindness that we show in our Christian lives as we try and serve our Master and Lord, the thanksgiving that we give, all kind of strange to one class of people, much like these people that had gathered in Simon's house. This is a waste. And then they came up with a very brilliant defense. could have sold it and given the money to the poor. That makes it sound better. Jesus will respond that you always have the poor, and that's true, and you can always do a kindness to them. Well, let's look at this woman for a few moments now. What shall we say about her? There's a saying, maybe you've used it, where there's a will, there's a way. All you have to have are two little things, desire and determination. And she had both. Now, if you think about it for just a minute, this is probably all men at this dinner. And this woman comes into the house. I don't know if she really knew Simon. I don't know how she even knew that they were having the dinner there. But she comes in. And she comes before all of them. And she comes up behind Jesus and anoints his head. Can you see the desire to do something kind to this man? Perhaps she knew about some of the miracles that he had performed. Whatever the case may be, there was desire. And there was something else that you and I need. Determination. Have you ever thought of some kind deed that you could do for someone? And then you thought, the more you thought about it, the less it sounded like a good idea. And so it went by the way. This woman had desire, and she had determination, and nothing was going to stop her. Can you see her as she opens the door and comes in? All the men surrounding the table, what do? They look at this individual that has come in without an invitation. She's come in and gotten in the way of what they're doing. And yet here she comes. There is a passage in Galatians chapter 6 and verse 10 that I think she would appreciate. As we have opportunity, let us do good to all men, especially those of the household of faith. This was an opportunity, and she wasn't going to be debtored from it. She was going to carry through. And then you think, whatever the cost, surely there were cheaper perfumes around. Surely she could have chosen something less than the value of a labor man's whole year of work to anoint Jesus' head. In the Old Testament, there is a story of David. Before he became the king, after some battle, he had a great desire to build an altar to his God and to worship him, to offer a sacrifice. He went to the king, said, I would like to have this piece of property, and I would like to build an altar to my God. The king responded, you've done good things for me. Go ahead, take it. This is what David said. I will not offer burnt offerings to my God, which cost me nothing. Which cost me nothing. This woman spent something that was an entire year's worth of labor for a man on this one occasion. Yes, it cost her. Yes, it cost her. But I think she must have had the same sentiment as David. I won't do anything for my God that costs me nothing. I want us just to pause for a minute. What does Christianity cost you? And are we willing to pay the price? If it costs us nothing, that's probably what we get out of it. It costs us. At this particular moment, it costs us the challenge of coming out, wearing a mask, being a little bit concerned about being with others in an event such as our worship. But we're willing to pay the price. As we go through our daily activities, we discover that Christianity is not as popular in America as it once was. When I started preaching back in the 70s, the New Testament Church was the fastest growing religious group in the United States of America. Now we hear that we are losing numbers, not just from the pandemic, but I guess not willing to pay the price. And yet on the other hand, multitudes are willing to pay the price. We gather together. It takes some effort. That's paying the price. You may do something that costs you something. Maybe not as much as this woman's gift, but it costs you a little bit of effort, a little bit of determination, if you please. Shake hands with the lady. Shake hands with David. He wouldn't do anything that didn't cost him at least something. We don't want free religion. We want to recognize some cost to us. And then, why do you think that she broke the vial and poured the whole contents on Jesus' head? From what I read, it was not unusual. When you had a guest come into your home, you would sprinkle maybe 2 drops of perfume upon them. And yes, she broke a vial and she poured the whole thing on Jesus. Why? Apparently, a couple of drops would not satisfy her need. How many drops does it take to have strong Christianity in your life? A couple of drops probably doesn't do it. It takes more than that, doesn't it? It takes a commitment. It takes some sense of what's important. Remember, these men that were in the upper room, or in this room, they knew the cost of the perfume, but they didn't know the value of her kindness. There's a passage that I find very interesting and very useful. Ephesians chapter 1, verses 18 and 19. How much does it take to have this in your life? I pray that the eyes of your heart may be enlightened, that you may know the hope of his calling you, the riches of his inheritance in the saints, and the surpassing greatness of his power toward you who believe. A couple of drops doesn't do it, does it? It takes a whole lot more to discover what those 3 things really are worth. And so the woman had a will, and she found a way. Opportunity, and she took advantage. Desire, and she had determination. But let's look at Jesus before our time is all gone. Jesus is the one that gives us the title for our study. And he's the one who says, she has done a good deed, and she has done what she could. Now, let me ask you this. How did Jesus know that this is what she could do? That there are some other things that could have been done, but this is what she could do. How did he know her limitations? How does he know your limitations? If you've done what you feel you can do, how does Jesus measure that? I have a couple of answers. Number one, in John chapter 2, verse 24 and 25 is toward the end. And this is the occasion when Jesus has turned the water into wine. Apparently, some want to make something special of it. And John records this. He says that Jesus does not trust any man because he knows what is in man. Well, that's kind of a scary thought, isn't it? He knows what is in man. He knows when you're doing what you can do. He knew this woman had done what she could do, that her desire was to do a good deed. But there's even more. If you turn back to Psalm 139, listen to what David knew. O Lord, you have searched me and known me. You know when I sit down, when I rise up. You understand my thoughts from afar. You scrutinize my path and my lying down, and are intimately acquainted with all my ways. You think it surprised Jesus when the woman came in? No. He looked at her and he knew that this is what she could do. I don't know how she arrived at this, having this ointment that was so expensive. Maybe she was a wealthy woman. It didn't really matter to Jesus. He didn't say anything about the cost. What he said was, she's done what she could do. Think about that in your own Christian life. When I first started preaching, longer than some of you have been alive, I felt, like most young preachers, that I had to do great things. And it frustrated me that I wasn't doing great things. The first place I preached, I went for at least a year and a half before I ever even had a baptism. And when preachers got together during that period of time, and this was in the 70s, one of the first questions would be, well, how many baptisms have you had? Or the next question was, how many Bible studies have you had? And you'd hang your head if you hadn't had any of either one. But you know, somewhere along the line, I discovered that God doesn't judge me for what I can't do, for the opportunities that don't come, but for taking advantage of what I can do and the opportunities that do come along. And you know, I was a lot more comfortable with being a gospel preacher when I finally discovered that lesson. And so Jesus tells this woman and the others, she's done what she could do. And it's almost like he's saying to them, how about you? Are you doing what you can do? You can sit there and complain about her. You can sit there and say what could have been. But what are you doing? Are you doing what you can do? And I'm sure they hung their heads and they looked away. There is a great lesson here. When you think about what Jesus says in verse 8, not only does he say, she has done what she could, he said this, she has anointed my body for burial. I don't know if the men in this home heard that, but less than 48 hours later, Jesus would be dead and he would be anointed for the grave. He saw the bigger picture. She saw anointing with some lotion that had cost her quite a bit. They saw waste. And Jesus saw the bigger picture. When you do a kind deed, when you do what you can, it's the same Christ you serve. And he takes note of the bigger picture. Some of you send cards. Some of you make phone calls. Some of you do little things that you may think are irrelevant in the bigger picture. But they're not. They're not. If what this woman did in the midst of the time frame that Jesus knew he was in made him look at the bigger picture and be thankful for what she had done, then when he sees you or me seek to do some little insignificant thing in our eyes, What do you think it's like in his eyes? And there's one more picture here. And that is, Jesus defended the woman. He said, leave her alone. Leave her alone. You know, I racked my brain when I was working on this lesson to try and think of another occasion when Jesus came to the defense of someone. And I couldn't think of another occasion. But on this occasion, leave her alone. She has done a good deed for me. Leave her alone. And I think of this passage in Romans chapter 8, about verse 35 and following. Who shall separate us from the love of Christ? Shall tribulation, persecution, famine, nakedness, peril, sword, nay, and all these things, we overwhelmingly conquer through him who loves us. Through him who loves us. I'm persuaded that neither life nor death, nor angels nor principalities, nor things present nor things to come, shall be able to separate us from the love of God, which is in Christ Jesus. You think he doesn't defend us to the Father, to the Spirit, in this life in ways that we have no comprehension? Walt read a card a few moments ago from a lady that had been helped with a funeral, with the loss of a father. And she was saying that the little things that were done meant much to her. And so as we go out into the world, this is a period of time when this world, this city, this neighborhood, our friends, our acquaintances may need a kind deed. And it's within our power because we know the value of a kind deed to do that very thing. The lady, unnamed. Some have made her the Mary of John chapter 12. I don't know. It's in that occasion, it's 6 days before the Passover. And it's Jesus' feet that are anointed. But whatever the case, the lesson is the same. Little things mean a lot. Jesus put his stamp of approval on that very fact. If there's some way that we can help you, not only this day, but on through the weeks ahead, if there comes a time when we can't meet anymore like this for a while, then our kindnesses toward one another will be so important. May we learn the lesson as Jesus observes the woman. She has done what she could. If you're here today and there's some way that we can help you through our prayers, through our encouragement, little things mean a lot. Make it known while we stand and while we sing.